Have you ever stood at a crossroads so significant that you felt frozen, unable to move forward or back? Perhaps it was a job offer that meant relocating your family, a relationship that demanded a clear commitment, or a career path that required abandoning years of investment. These moments, when we must decide whether to start something new, stay where we are, or leave what we've built, define the architecture of our lives. Yet most of us navigate these critical junctures with little more than gut feelings and the conflicting advice of well-meaning friends. What if there was a more thoughtful way to approach life's most consequential decisions? What if we could learn from someone who's faced these crossroads repeatedly, from courtroom prosecutor to congressman, and developed a framework that transforms paralyzing uncertainty into purposeful action? The answer lies not in finding perfect clarity, but in understanding how to structure our thinking when everything feels like it matters. Because it does. Most decisions focus on immediate concerns, salary, convenience, momentary feelings. But powerful decisions start with the end. Picture yourself decades from now. What do you want people to say about you? What do you hope you've accomplished? This isn't morbid, it's strategic. Consider Ricky Samuel, a young man with minor legal troubles who cooperated with federal authorities to avoid a 5-year sentence. After successfully helping catch a drug dealer, he was murdered execution style by a man posing as a neighborhood preacher, someone who spent weeks gaining his trust before having him kneel in prayer and shooting him twice in the head. Standing at that murder scene, thinking of Ricky's mother and the failed promises of protection, something crystallized. Every decision needs to begin with the closing argument and work backward from there. This approach transforms decision-making. When young people seek career advice, the question isn't what job pays well, but what do you want accomplished by the end of your life? It's the difference between doing things and accomplishing them. One person studies history because they have AP credits. Another chooses philosophy to develop critical thinking for their ultimate purpose of helping crime victims. Same action, vastly different accomplishments. For years, success looked like building a pyramid, each achievement narrowing toward distinction. Federal prosecutor, political office, television appearances. Each credential was another point of differentiation. But this model has a fatal flaw. It's built entirely on external validation. You're forever adding layers, forever proving yourself, forever exhausted. There's another trap, the ladder model, where each rung represents incremental achievements. Some aim for the absolute top, President of the United States, despite astronomical odds. Of roughly 545 million Americans throughout history, only 45 different men have held that office. The latter depends on outperforming others, which means most people are unsuccessful by definition. In 2015, an opportunity arose to run for Speaker of the House. The pyramid mentality screamed, "Go for it!" But something had shifted. Success had been redefined, not by what others thought, but by what reflected back from people who truly mattered, and most importantly, from yourself. Here's what liberation looks like. Someone who judges you by character rather than accomplishments. Even more liberating is when you finally listen to them. Most liberating of all is becoming that someone for yourself. When facing major decisions, one question dissolves paralysis. What's the worst thing that could happen? Not what are the risks, that's too abstract. This forces you to confront actual consequences rather than vague anxieties. The follow-up matters even more. Do I have a plan for dealing with the worst if it does happen? This isn't reckless optimism, it's strategic realism. If you can plan for disaster, everything short of disaster becomes manageable. If you can't handle the worst-case scenario, you probably shouldn't proceed. Consider a 17-year-old at church, eyeing the most radiant girl there, someone who'd never noticed him. "I think I'm going to ask her to make my lunch for the choir tour," he announces. His friends laugh. His response? What's the worst thing that can happen? Just rejection. And since they're at church, even a no would likely be kind. She said yes. 32 years of marriage followed. This framework acknowledges fear while seeking security. Analyze thoroughly. Will this endanger my family? Can I recover from failure? But don't wait for complete certainty. Our legal system only requires beyond reasonable doubt, not absolute certainty. If firmly convinced suffices for capital murder trials, it should be enough for your master's program or dream business. We like to think we're rational, but anyone agonizing over a 3 a.m. decision knows better. Fear creeps in. Intuition whispers warnings. Emotions surge. The question isn't whether to involve your head, heart, and gut. They're already involved. It's how to balance them. Think of it like government's three branches. Logic drives decisions, intuition navigates, and emotions provide the soundtrack. Logic keeps you on course, but relying solely on it makes for a lonely journey. Your intuition, often manifesting as fear, can be valuable when it makes you pause. The key is making fear a passenger, not the driver. To tame fear, separate possibilities from probabilities. Yes, you could fail spectacularly, but what are the actual odds? Apply reason through numbers. Develop worst-case scenarios while recognizing you'll likely never need them. Another powerful antidote, focusing on others. We're most courageous when defending someone we care about. During the pandemic, while some obsessed over mortality graphs, others helped students and checked on neighbors. When we focus outward through compassion, fear becomes a companion rather than a controller. As for emotions, those powerful feelings that override rational thought, treat them as witnesses, not judges. Cross-examine their testimony. Enthusiasm confirms good choices. Uncertainty warns of ignored problems. Let emotions inform your decisions, not control them. Deciding to stay isn't declining a different path. It's taking inventory of your current position and giving your initial decisions time to mature. In a culture obsessed with reinvention, staying put can feel like failure. But sometimes perseverance yields rewards that jumping ship never could. Picture showing up for what you thought was a bowling class in college. Perfect timing, convenient location, easy grade. You arrive at the Student Union Building's bowling alley to find it empty. Turns out BL doesn't stand for bowling. It stands for ballet. You walk into a room of leotard-clad dancers, mortified. The instructor convinces you to stay with the promise of an A. That class becomes a source of lifelong memories and important lessons about not fleeing when things don't turn out as expected. There's no guarantee the next option will meet your expectations either. Persevering builds invaluable experience, something you can't acquire by wishing for it. Consistency signals dependability, a trait that employers and partners recognize instantly. Before leaving, ask yourself, are you escaping external problems or avoiding internal changes? Have you become addicted to starting fresh? Sometimes no change is the best decision. You're building something that will live beyond you. No matter how thoroughly we analyze decisions, we're often too close to see the whole picture. That's why we need trusted people who can spot obstacles we've missed. Everyone needs a Nathan, someone with courage to speak uncomfortable truth. In the Bible, Nathan confronted King David after his adultery with the powerful words, "You are the man." Shortly after being elected, a judgeship opportunity arose offering 8 years of security. Despite having just asked voters for their trust, the rationalization seemed reasonable. A father's visit brought uncharacteristic directness. "You cannot do this. It's not right or fair to those who helped elect you." A risk-taking friend agreed. While he understood the appeal, taking the judgeship would be like putting on handcuffs. Look for three traits in your Nathans: people who have your best interest in mind, who know you well, including your strengths and weaknesses, and who are honest enough to speak difficult truths. To benefit, you must be humble enough to listen without becoming defensive. Just as important is identifying who shouldn't advise you. The opposite of a Nathan isn't an enemy, but someone who only wants your momentary happiness without challenging you. But sometimes, even the best advisors can't save us from ourselves. The hardest departures are from positions that once represented your greatest aspirations, because leaving feels like betraying yourself. By 2009, prosecuting violent crimes had taken a devastating spiritual toll. As a prosecutor, immersing yourself in humanity's darkest aspects isn't optional. It's the job. The most effective prosecutors force themselves to experience what victims felt, to be their voice. This meant constantly dwelling on scenes of malice and terror. One case haunts still, an elderly couple murdered in their bed by someone they had helped. The image of the husband's broken body reaching toward his wife in death, love trying but failing against depravity, remains etched in memory. Reconciling these horrors with faith became impossible. Sitting in church hearing about God's love, the platitudes couldn't be squared with crime scene photographs. The job was exacting too steep a price on family. A daughter sleeping on the floor after overhearing conversations about bad people. That Mother's Day, both wife and mother independently concluded it was time to leave. The solution? Running for Congress as an honorable exit from a job that could no longer be done. Leaving wasn't failure, it was survival. After Trump's 2016 election, a call came about serving on the Fourth Circuit Court of Appeals, the very court once dreamed of joining. Everything aligned, Republican president and Senate, supportive senators, two openings. But something had shifted. The toughest mountain had been scaled, letting go of others' expectations. Standing in the kitchen, the truth was clear. Who you worked with now meant more than what you did. When the White House called a third time, the answer was absolute. I do not want this anymore. Understanding your motivation is liberating. About half the world seeks success, the other half avoids failure. Fear has influenced decisions an entire lifetime, but peace with fear is possible, letting it look and edit, but not write your life's closing chapter. Your decisions determine your success, but first you must decide what success means to you. Define it by what you control, your words, mindset, and effort. Small daily choices matter. Respectful language during disagreements, maintaining optimism, choosing reading over television, showing care to loved ones. To turn regret into remembrance, be honest about what happened, reflect on what you learned, replace if only with next time. Make decisions with confidence, guided by your own definition of success rather than someone else's scorecard. People will forget your titles, but they'll remember your character. Fair and funny, that's enough. Your story is yours to write. Make it count.